Every community has its share of characters, those people whose sheer force of personality and action set them apart, often as unforgettable. They add spice to local life and help give a place its personality. St. Louis has had plenty of them over the years and still does. A large number of them are included in the new book, Colorful Characters of St. Louis. The author is local journalist-writer Jim Merkel, who's published three other books about St. Louis and St. Louisans. We welcome Jim to our studio. Nice to have you here.
Oh, I love to be here.
Congratulations on the book. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. We got 80 different colorful characters who are dedicated to the idea that life shouldn't be boring. And I've got to know many of the living, most of the living ones in them, about a couple dozen. And the rest of them, I really feel like I know them personally. And, you know, like, they do things odd, but they get things done.
Yeah, and we know all of them. Whether we know them personally or not, we certainly know of them. And having heard from them and in some cases experienced their eccentricities, if you will.
Oh, sure. Everybody I talk to, they say, oh, that person right there, they did this. And they tell a personal connection to one of them.
Well, how do you define a character here? How did you determine who these 80 would be?
Well, we talked about it, of course, me and my publisher. And it's people who are different. I'm going to throw out a word that may seem odd, but it's obsession. And obsession doesn't have to be negative. Obsession is quirky. Obsession is pressing and pressing and pressing. And you say, why did they do that? And it's not necessarily a negative thing. Often it's very positive, but it's, you say, you know, like, here's one, Percy Green. He's a different, you know, one of the things that made him successful and made many of the people who made a difference, and we have a section on them, is they keep on coming back, and they're keeping, you know, like, are you back again? Yes, I still want more jobs. Are you back again? I still want more jobs. What do you mean you're up 125 feet on top of the arch and you won't go down? My gosh.
Well, his story is well known. I notice, Jim, that in the way you've broken down the book into various categories, that the largest category is Mavericks and Renegades,
right?
Of which Percy Green is one, as I recall. The second largest is media. And that's how you start the book.
Right.
A lot of us here are wondering why we're not in it.
Well, that's what a lot of people say. You're in my next book.
Next book, yeah. I'm always in everybody else's next book, Jeff. I've heard that before. No, seriously, why this emphasis on media and then the Mavericks and Renegades?
Well, we just found so many fascinating people. You couldn't really leave out Bill Malden. Who was a big
Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah, right. And two times. Robert Hyland, the boss who drove everybody crazy, who worked for him. I've heard so many stories about him. You know, how if somebody mispronounced a St. Louis, if you said Gravois at midnight, you would get a call. And you'd say...
Or if you said it at 3 o'clock in the morning, you'd get a call.
Oh,
because the guy never slept.
And then Dana Brown... The coffee guy who and then Jack Carney. Oh, what a character. Oh, I hear stories about him.
He was in broadcasting in St. Louis. He was at the very top of the heap.
Oh, yeah. It's a shame that he passed away so soon.
Well, and he brought some people with him into your book. Miriam Blue. Some people remember the All Is Well lady, who was the cleaning lady at KMOX. And he put her on the air one day, and she became a regular.
Right.
And then there was Harry Fender.
Right. And, you know, the cleaning lady, that's something that you'd have in a movie from the 30s or the 40s. And she kept cleaning. She didn't have to. And she, all is well.
All is well was she said.
Of course, Steve Miserani, Fred Tootenberg. I mean, I could have gone on and on and on, but... You know, you had to cut this off somehow. As far as Mavericks and Renegades, and I'll tell you a little secret, the Mavericks, that's where we put everybody else that we couldn't categorize another way.
That's but, why it's the biggest category.
Of course. You know, that we've got my favorite one of the Maverick and Renegade of the whole book and anybody is Renard Nebot. Now, nobody's going to know that name.
Unless you're from Webster Groves, as unless, I was for many years.
Yeah, or unless you're from any place. Yeah. This guy, he's mentally challenged, and he's very happy. And for years, for decades, he has stood on the Rock Hill Road overpass mm-hmm. of 44 and waved. And I put a little item about him in my website, just a little teaser. And that got 36,000 hits.
Well, a lot of people saw him every day because there he was, and you drive up and down Highway 44, and he was there.
Oh, yeah.
Every day.
Yeah, and you know, the other guy is Paul Father Time Pagano. He died not long ago. I got a chance to meet him, and he was at my release party back at the beginning of October. He was really happy, and I think more than a million people probably have seen him. And he's just – his whole thing is just shaking hands and saying, God bless America. And, you know, he was just such a wonderful guy. But the interesting thing about him is that he the reason why he did this is that he was a very happy, big Catholic family man, and his wife died back in 79, and it crushed him. And for 2 years, he just withdrew within himself. And then after that, he decided, that's enough of that. And he got in this really loud outfit, and he started going to all kinds of events and making people happy. And, you know, it's a joy out of tragedy.
Of all of the 80 characters you have in the book, is there one that to you is the most unforgettable, or the character of all characters?
Well, I mean, I think I could say Renard Nebot.
The overpass guy.
The overpass guy. You know, like, I'm in the book.
What, your epilogue?
Yeah, publisher. He decided that he wanted me to be in, and so I wrote my wasted life as a writer.
Maybe one of the longest chapters, but
right. Yeah, I always have one in my books that are kind of long. Yeah. And but, you know, like, I'd say that by giving me the opportunity to write, my publisher changed my life. I'd say he ruined it.
No, you don't mean that. Well, I mean, here you are on the radio, for crying out loud.
Well, yeah, I know. Seriously. I mean, I love doing this. I love writing. I love getting out and hearing. And my favorite thing is going out and hearing people come up to me and saying, I love that book. And the idea that something I did would cause two or three hours of joy or happiness, that's pleasure. That's marvelous.
How did you do your research? I mean, obviously, many of these people are still alive. I assume you talk to them, interview them, what have you. What about the others that are no longer with us?
I interviewed, I think, all but two of them, and the other two were out of town. But I went into my favorite place, which is the St. Louis room of the Central Library downtown. That's my favorite place to go. So many marvelous old articles. Those old guys who newspaper people who would just bring people to life, and if you get those and just interviews and books, say I found an awful lot about, say, Phyllis Diller and so many others. And these are books that, again, were only in the Central Library, you know.
Well, mentioning Phyllis Diller, she is given credit locally for having been kind of a St. Louisan, but she actually didn't live here all that long, did she?
No, she only lived here from, I think, 62 to 65. She was going back and forth, and she left her kids off at in-laws who were in this apartment at Shaw and Vandeventer. It's now the Bug House. It used to be the Eagle Drug. And So she got to get to know it, and she decided, well, I want a central place where I can also be a mom. And she found her house in Webster Groves.
By central place, some place in the center of the country,
right.
So she could go to either coast or wherever to do her thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And she stayed there for 3 years. And when she was at home, she was a mom. And she was preparing for her kids, various things. And so there's so many. I've several. Patricia Corrigan, who used to write for the Post-Dispatch,
sure.
And now is out in San Francisco. She wrote about some of the things that she did, about how there was all of Phyllis Diller's outfits in the basement. She was a friend of a daughter of Phyllis Diller, mm-hmm. And she went out to a Crestwood Mall in a taxi cab. So, you know, wonderful stories about them. And
you know, I mentioned Harry Fender a little while ago,
sure.
And I wanted to bring up something that is not in the book, but a story that I've always heard. If it's not in the book, I imagine maybe it's not a true story. But
well,
I heard
that's
that
not so.
When he was selected to play the role of Gaylord Ravenel in Showboat, he was going to be the star of that thing for Ziegfeld, decided not to do it. You say in the book that it was because he was burned out. My version of the story, and I think I've heard him say this on Carney's show years ago,
right.
Is that he had an affair with the lady friend of a mobster in New York, and the mobster said, you know, I'm going to kill you if you don't get out of town. And that's why Harry left New York to become ultimately a policeman in the city of St. Louis.
Oh, wow. I mean, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
I'm sure, well, that maybe I relied on the cover story.
Well, you know, whatever. It may be something that a story Harry liked to tell that may not have been true. Just always found that a fascinating kind of
story.
Well,
when I have a rewrite, I'll come back to you.
Who do you regret now not having in the book, now that it's done? Your next book, of course, will include this person. Who would that have been?
Who would that have been?
Jack Buck, Whitey Herzog.
Okay.
Let me just throw some names out at you who are not in the book.
There's one person, very public, who declined. I wish he was in, would have been in, but I'd rather not say who that was.
Uh-huh.
So, no, I mean, but there were many, many people who I didn't include. There's so many interesting people out there.
Yeah. One of them is my old colleague, Zip Rezepa. And I think people who don't know what happened to him after he left television sports would be interested in finding out how he has committed his life to a much different world.
Oh, sure. I don't know if they use this term, but he's a Catholic evangelist.
Right.
And he goes out and he's very open with his faith. And that's a good thing.
Here's a guy who was making several hundred thousand dollars a year when he was in broadcasting, one of the few who ever attained that kind of salary in St. Louis, and gave it all up to do, as you say, evangelize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think his book was he did this for a higher cause,
yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. But there were many, many people, including the people who the rebels with the cause, you know, who did things for a different reason. The Reverend Kenneth McCoy, he was a pastor in a black church in Webster Groves, and he decided he wanted to start a black church in a very bad part of St. Louis, and now he's walking around late at night just to speak out against murders and stuff.
Sure. Well, he's got plenty to do then in this town, no question about it. Tell me about the cover of the book. You've got five pictures, I may say. I recognize all but one. Tell us who's on the cover.
Okay. We've got Phyllis Diller in the middle, and this is really fun. It's just fun to look at this. We've got Steve Mizrani, we've got Josephine Baker, and we've got Yogi. The person you may not recognize is Stephen Fitzpatrick Smith, who operates a very political, very fun neighborhood bar down on South Kings Highway.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is a really neat guy. He's been a boxing promoter. He had the Hoosier Weights Championships. Really different place, and he's really speaking out for St. Louis.
Yeah, he's the one that I didn't recognize. I did recognize Josephine Baker, and it should be pointed out, as you do in the story, that she was no great fan of St. Louis.
Oh no, and she left after she witnessed the East St. Louis riots, and she came back in 51. And she gave this speech basically railing against the racism of St. Louis, which there was. And unfortunately, many of the other people, black people that I talked to, said the same thing. But, you know.
Well, part of her situation was that she was a big international star at the time, and she came back. And there are many places in St. Louis where she couldn't stay. I think the Chase being one of them.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Many of the black entertainers of that time could not. They'd have to stay with friends, as I understand it, because the hotels would not accept them as clientele.
That makes sense. Yeah. But as I said, everybody I talk to tells their own story that I say, I wish I could have had it in.
There are a million stories in the big city, Jim Merkel, and you've got 80 of them here. It's really quite fascinating reading about these people, and we appreciate the fact you've done it, and we look forward to that sequel. Is one planned?
Well, we're finishing up a book called The Unique Homes of St. Louis, and it's about various homes in St. Louis.
We'll look forward to that. Jim Merkel, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Great to see you. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.